Hello, and welcome to State of Crime. One state, two murders, lots of crime, with Kaylin and Elena.
Hello.
You guys don't even know the talk we were just having.
She's yelling at me.
I am.
That's fine.
Kaylin leaves the computer in the car for 2 weeks at a time and then tells me, oh, it's fine because it's under stuff. So I just want you all to remember the next time you're sitting in your car and it's like 120 degrees, if you just crawl under some stuff, it'll be fine.
But it's like cold to the touch. It's not even warm.
That's right because now. Right now it's like 70 degrees outside.
That's true. Oh, well. It works fine. It actually started up with no issues today when normally it gives us a bunch of issues.
Oh, I have a bunch of issues, let me tell you.
Same.
So we took last week off because it was the 4th of July. And I'm a slacker because now Kaylin has to shame me. But I do have my case together today.
Good job.
Although I did end up changing my case. So, okay. And I'll talk about that a little bit more. But before we get to our case today, I want to talk about the fact that we are all living in some serious-ass true crime right now.
Okay.
And that is the lack of leadership in this country when it comes to dealing with the pandemic. And the fact that our case numbers are going off the charts and everyone's acting like, but, you know, we'll just open schools and everything will be normal. And I get that everybody wants normal. Just opening schools is not going to be normal. Opening schools means you're going to have even more cases. And now you're going to have to explain to your kid why their classmate and or their teacher is dead.
You and I have very different viewpoints.
Yes, we do.
On this we do. On this we do have very different viewpoints.
Y'all need to watch Contagion and see how this shit works.
I remember when everything with COVID first started coming out and somebody had posted the trailer to that saying that it was a new movie and they had planned the whole thing. And I was like, guys, this movie came out like 10 years ago.
Yeah, chill. It was 2011.
Yeah. But yeah, you and I just have very different views when it comes to this.
Well, you cannot deny the fact that 136 people are dead in this country.
Okay. You're right. I can't.
Okay. So, I mean, honestly, the fact
the
that...
the numbers are so hard to trust.
They are not so hard to trust.
They are hard. When you've got doctors and nurses who have come out and said, we sent in unused tests and they came back positive.
Where are you finding this shit?
Or there's a doctor.
Where are you finding this shit? I want to know your source.
There is a doctor.
A doctor.
There is a doctor from Meridian. Mm-hmm. Who put out a video where he was contacted by the Central District Health. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So he was contacted saying that he had come in contact with somebody who had tested positive mm-hmm. for COVID. And eventually after talking with them for a while, they had asked him, do you have any symptoms? Blah, blah, blah. He says, no, all this stuff. And he ends up talking with one of the other guys from the same place and asked him, if I'd have told you that I had a runny nose and a cough, mm-hmm. would you have marked me as a positive case? Mm-hmm. And they told him, yes, we don't have to test you for you to be marked as positive.
Okay, A, that's wrong. B, what they're marked as is a probable case, but they're not marked as a positive case until they've actually been tested.
See, that's not what they're saying.
Well, I don't care what they're saying. And the other thing is, St. Al's in Boise just announced that they are cutting back on testing because they don't have enough tests and because the labs are so overwhelmed with the numbers of tests that they're only testing the very sickest people. So all this bullshit about, oh, well, the numbers are so inflated. There's no way for the numbers to be inflated when people cannot even get tested when they want to be tested.
Okay.
You and I are going to fight.
That's fine.
I'm done. But anyway, like I said, this whole thing with, you know, Trump just thinking he can tweet in all capitals, schools must reopen, but there's no plan. No plan whatsoever.
Right.
You know, I mean, different districts are starting to come out with some, but I'm talking about from our leadership. In our state board of education has a plan that is non-binding. Now, I just want you guys all to imagine for a little bit. Can you imagine if, as a teacher, when I ran my classroom, all of my assignments were non-binding? or if my classroom rules were non-binding. That is the stupidest thing in the world. And the fact that we have no true leadership left at all anymore, it just keeps getting pushed down, down, down. And it's going to be on us as teachers to figure this garbage out.
Yeah.
For the most part. And I'm sorry, I'm not doing it.
Right.
I'm not doing this. I am sick and tired of picking up the slack for all the people who don't do their damn jobs. And I'm talking about our government leadership and all the people, you know, above me. I'm sick of it. I'm not doing it anymore.
My biggest
And the thing- fact that our state Board of Education cannot come up with any sort of a plan and right. just say, hey, if you got this many cases in your county, do this. Pretty easy.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, it's going to take some time. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Maybe easy isn't the right word, but that's your job as right. a leader.
Right.
Can you, like I said, I'm the leader in my classroom. I don't just walk out, stand there and go, you guys just figure out what you want to do.
Right.
I'm done with this stupidity. And Betsy DeVos is a troll bitch from hell who needs to die in a hole.
Yeah, I don't, the whole school thing, my thing is if doing the homeschooling, the online from homeschooling is what they decide to do, I don't understand how they're going to, how it's, I don't understand how anybody in leadership positions expects people to be able to stay home with their children to do their schooling.
Right.
And that, still be able to work and provide for their family.
Oh.
So like me, I'm a single mom. How the fuck am I supposed to stay home every day to teach my kids school instead of going to work and being able to provide for him?
I'm 100% with you. But I can also tell you, I'm not stepping into a room with 30 kids, not wearing masks, breathing on me for 7 hours a day.
Right.
I don't want to die. I'm sorry. That's what it comes down to. I am in the high risk category. Like I said, my mom lives with me. She's high risk. I would really like to not die.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry if that's too much to ask as a teacher in this country that, gee, maybe I don't have to think about dying when I enter my classroom. That's already been a fear ever since Columbine.
Right.
And, you know, granted, I've always known that that was a measured risk. You know, the likelihood of it happening in the big picture is very small.
Right.
But it's there.
Yeah.
And, you know, this idea, though, with COVID, which has a death rate of around 1%,
mm-hmm.
okay, we have, sorry, my brain just shut down, but we, you know, we have what, around a little over 3,000 kids in this district.
Mm-hmm.
What's 1% of 3,000?
Shit, math.
30?
Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
So can you imagine if 30, can you imagine if 30 kids in this town die?
Right.
And everyone's saying, well, you know, oh, kids don't get it, or it's not as bad. The reason that we haven't had many kids having it is because we shut schools down in March. Just go and do some Googling about summer camps that have opened up around the country and see how many of them immediately had, or not immediately, but within a short period of time, had to shut down because COVID started hitting people.
Now, what about like daycares? Because daycares have remained open.
I have not looked at statistics about daycares, I have to
you
be
know
honest.
What I mean?
So,
because,
yeah.
So my whole thing is like, if schools do go to online, daycares are basically just going to turn into schools because parents are going to be, are going to have to continue to work and they're just going to have the daycare. So now these poor daycares.
Well, we have to figure out something.
Right.
Like I said.
Right.
And
if the daycares are going to be open and they're going to be doing school in the mm-hmm. daycare like that, why not just open the fucking schools?
But this idea of, well, we're just going to have life. We're just going to return to normal life.
Right.
Because that's what we all want is normal life. You don't get normal life when your circumstances are absolutely abnormal.
Right.
And that is something that nobody wants to talk about and deal with. We all want to play this game that, oh, if we just act normally, somehow things are normal. And that is not true. Sorry.
Nope, you're good.
I may have come completely unraveled in the past week or so because I've been reading all of these things and I'm just, like I said, my frustration level is through the roof. And we waited and we waited and we are waiting for the state board to have their meeting and present their plan. And you know, the first thing they say in their plan is that everybody's going to be in school in person and our plan is non-binding. So I don't even, I can't anymore. I don't even know what to say.
Right.
The lack of leadership again from the national level down to the state is criminal.
Yeah.
And it is getting people killed. That is the end of this story. And, you know, yes, it's hard and it's tough. It takes creative thinking. It takes new solutions. But you can't say, you cannot keep trying to shove this new square peg into the old round hole. It's never going to work. So, all right, that's enough of my pontificating. And since we're talking about killing kids.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. Off we go to Illinois.
Here we go.
Yes. So we're getting back into our states here.
Regularly scheduled programming.
Regular scheduled programming, yes. And we're heading to Illinois. And originally I was going to do a kind of Black Lives Matter sort of case. And I started doing it. And I just got too upset. And between... like I said, me coming unglued with the whole school thing, I'm not in a good mental or emotional place right now. And I'm really starting to find that I'm having to, I don't know, like almost, I have to engage in a certain amount of escapism to keep my sanity. And so... my case today is purely an escapist case. It's pretty awful, but it's back to my historical cases, and it's got a good haunting associated with it. Okay. So, yeah, the things that I like. So we're going to Illinois. We're going to a very tiny, right outside of a very tiny little town called Cambridge, which is pretty far north in Illinois and very, very far over to the west. And today it has a population of about 2,160 people. And we are going to focus less than a mile outside of this town. There is a road known as Timber Ridge Road, and there's a very sharp curve in this road. And there are a lot of legends. When you are going down Timber Ridge Road, right where this sharp curve is, if you ever get to drive it, you will see a very large mulberry tree with an old fence that divides two cornfields. And it is here that people claim to see a woman in white.
Ah!
And, yes, woman in white ghosts are, you know, very famous.
Right.
Seems like they're everywhere. And, of course, as you would expect, anywhere that you have, like, a backcountry road with a very sharp turn, there's a fair number of accidents that will happen. And, of course, those often get blamed on this mysterious white figure as well. And in the May 19th, 2007, Moline Dispatch, which is a newspaper in the area, they reported an account that had happened 18 years earlier, and at that time, there was a large red barn that stood in one of these fields, and that barn had been around since at least the beginning of the 20th century, okay, probably late 19th, very early 20th century.
Okay.
And so, two young women were driving out here, looking for a place to just hang out, you know, get away, I guess, for whatever. And they're enjoying the beautiful scenery when one of the women says that she saw something, quote, white with long flowing hair. Mm. Okay, right in the area of this barn.
Okay.
And near this fence. And another woman told researchers, their names are Chad Lewis and Terry Fisk, that she saw a spook light floating along the fence. And these are just two of the documented cases I could find,
right.
But apparently there's a lot of them out there. So today, if you were to go down this road, the barn no longer stands. It was torn down, fell down, whatever.
Old.
Old, yes. But however, people still report seeing very strange things here. And well, they should, because in this area, an act of unspeakable horror occurred. And yet, it's one of those unspeakable acts of horror that continues to occur and does so with some regularity, unfortunately. And if anybody is familiar with the Andrea Yates case, this is a case that very much ties in and has echoes. So we're going to go back in time to 1896.
Okay.
A woman named Julia Johnson married a man named Clarence B. Markham. Now, I couldn't find very much information about either of them. I'm sure there's like birth and death record. You know what I mean? So I could have gotten maybe more about their ages, but I just didn't get the time to do that. But they were described in several of the articles as a young couple. So it doesn't seem like it was one of those creepy situations where he's way older like we've had in the past. And they settle onto a farm in Andover Township, which at the time was just outside of Cambridge. And you know how you have these little farming communities. You get a few farms together and they kind of form a little community.
Right.
So they were married for 9 years, okay, at the time. And during that 9-year span, they had 7 children.
Jesus.
So.
That's a lot of kids.
Yeah. So Julia has a child on average every 15 months. And so figure that out. She has a baby.
She recovers, and then she has another baby.
She has a newborn for 3 to 4 months, and then she's pregnant again. So now she's pregnant, taking care of a baby, dealing with pregnancy, and this just keeps snowballing. So you can maybe see where I'm going here.
Yeah.
Okay. So she, the 7 children all lived, which is kind of unusual for the time, and it seems like, you know, every pregnancy she had resulted in a living, healthy child, which, you know, is a nice thing on the one hand, but in her case seems to have become very overwhelming to her. So she has a little girl named Clara, who's 8, Harry, who is 7, Charles, who's 6, and then the next 3 little girls, I couldn't find their exact ages, but again, we know there's an average of about a year between them. Right. So you have Mary, Lucy, and Laura. So they're probably between the ages, you know, 2 to 5,
right.
Those 3 children, those 3 girls. And then the youngest was a little boy named Asa, who was 5 months old.
Okay.
Okay, so he's only 5 months when these events happen. So that's also going to play into maybe providing some explanation.
Okay.
So like we said, having 7 children in 9 years is going to be a little bit stressful.
A lot stressful.
Yes. Life on a farm, of course, at the turn of the century is very labor intensive. And we have a contemporaneous newspaper article in the Pittsburgh Press that mentions that the marriage was not happy, that there was at least one time where Julia had Clarence arrested for assault. And, you know, that's fairly unusual at the time as well.
Right.
Because, you know, we know that, of course, that domestic violence was not all that unusual per se. But for a man to actually get arrested for it is... So things must have gotten bad at some point for this to happen. So we have, you know, lots of children in a short period of time, certain amount of isolation out on a farm. Obviously, there's some likely abuse going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm always, you know, I suppose there can be one-offs where somebody just kind of loses it. But usually, if it's happened once, it happens multiple times.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make the assumption that there was probably a fair amount of domestic violence here. And possibly, with that many pregnancies that close together, a certain amount of postpartum depression that explodes into postpartum psychosis, which is what happened with Andrea Yates. And seems to be the case here. And as we go a little deeper, you'll get more clues as to why I think that's the case. So we are now, like I said, they married in 1896. We said they've been married about 9 years. So we're on the date of September 30th, 1905, which happened to fall on a Saturday.
Okay.
Clarence is out working in the fields, which of course he would be. It's a farm. And Julia's home with the kids. Around 11 a.m. that morning, she sends 8-year-old Clara and 7-year-old Harry, the two oldest, out to the spring and tells them to retrieve water because, you know, no indoor plumbing, right? You got to go get water and carry it back. And while Clara and Harry are on this errand, Julia picks up an axe and kills the 5 children in the house with her.
Whoa. Okay.
Yes. So.
So she lost her shit.
Yes. And then, as soon as Clara and Henry return to the home, she murders them as well.
I have a theory before we go further. Okay. I have a theory. So he got arrested for assault, right? The husband did.
Right.
What if he didn't start it? What if there wasn't actually abuse? What if it was the other way around? What if she was abusing him and when he hit her or anything like that, then she called the cops because she already, she has something in her. I think that anybody who can kill anybody or with children, can kill their own children, they already have something evil in them.
See, I'm going to disagree because I've had postpartum depression.
So have I.
With both my boys. And I did not get postpartum psychosis, which is another very extreme. And that's what Andrea Yates obviously had. There's been a lot of documentation of cases with this. And this is one case where I really do believe that insanity can set in and delusions as well. And we'll talk a little bit more about the delusions in just a minute. I know, like, so for instance, Andrea Yates, you said you're not familiar with that case. So Andrea Yates.
And I might be, once you start telling me about it, just not my
She
name.
Had, I believe, 5 children.
Okay.
And from the get-go, when she had kids, she had postpartum depression. To the point that their doctor had told her and her husband, you should not have any more children because this, you know, because this is something else we know about postpartum depression. If you have it with one child,
you're going to have it with all of them.
It tends to progressively get worse.
Right.
So in the Andrea Yates case, they were very, very, very fundamentalist Christians. Her husband was like an engineer, would leave her at home all day with these kids. They were homeschooled. I mean, everything's thrown at her. And like I said, I blame him as much as I blame her in that case because he was at the doctor's. He was told, you guys shouldn't have any more kids. But he's buying into all this patriarchal Christian bullshit that you just keep popping out babies. You don't use birth control. And she snaps after the birth of the 5th child and goes from having postpartum depression into full-blown postpartum psychosis, where she's convinced her children are possessed by the devil. She drowned all 5 of them and murdered them.
That end part sounds familiar.
Yeah, it was a huge, you know,
I'm sure I've
case
heard,
at the time,
yeah,
right?
I'm sure I heard about it.
And like I said, he's every bit as culpable because he was told too, you know, they were both in those doctor appointments where the doctor's like, look, this is an ongoing issue. It's going to get worse.
Right.
And they totally ignored all medical advice.
Right.
You know, so, anyway, so back to this case. So Julia murders Clara and Harry when they return to the house. And she then picks up a knife and cuts her own throat. So her plan was to commit suicide. It seems like, for whatever reason, the knife was not quite sharp enough, or maybe she hesitated. The articles I read all said that the knife was dull. I wonder if it wasn't just a hesitation sort of a thing. In any case, she is wounded and she is bleeding fairly profusely. All of the children are on a bed together and she douses the bed with coal oil and sets it on fire and stays in the house. Neighbors see the smoke because coal oil, I mean, in addition to a fire putting off a lot of smoke, coal oil is very, very smoky when it burns as well. And of course, they run over to help. Her husband at some point is brought in from the fields as well. Whether he saw, I'm assuming he probably saw the fire as well.
Right.
As the neighbors come, you know, and they realize we can't get into the house because it's, the fire's too big, Julia comes crawling out of the house. And so even though she seems to have been suicidal, you know, I think sometimes instinct or whatever comes over.
Fight or flight.
Yeah. So she crawls from the burning house. Almost all of her clothing is burnt off her body, and she has severe burns as well as this gaping, bleeding neck wound. And so she's literally just laying out there in the yard by the house. And it was described that her husband Clarence, you know, is going to Julia, who's lying there gasping feebly, you know, and then of course trying to fight this fire, which, you know, as we know at that point, and when you don't have modern firefighting equipment, it's a done deal.
Right.
And so while she's laying there, they of course are like, you know, what happened, whatever. At first she claims that a large man with a black hat and a black mustache had come in and committed the murders. And for whatever reason, the police immediately don't believe her. And I don't know why. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's something in the delivery of her story that set them off. Like I said, there's a lot here we don't know, as right. is often the case with these historical cases. And at any rate, they're just like, we don't believe you. You know, she's still laying here in the yard, burnt and bleeding. And so she asks them, what will happen to me if I tell you the truth? And they're very blunt, and they just tell her, you're going to be dead soon anyway, so nothing. Yeah, right. You're going to die. And so at that point, she confesses that, yes, in fact, she had committed this deed and is dead by 3 p.m. And shortly thereafter, and this is where my timeline kind of fell apart. So this last little bit came from a Chicago Tribune article that supposedly was dated the 1st of October, 1905. So that would have been the very next day. And I'm not sure about exactly how these things would have happened because, like I said, September 30th was a Saturday, but apparently Clarence gets a letter, or there's a letter for Clarence in the post office, but he obviously gets it. So she had written and mailed this letter before she does these acts. And the letter reads verbatim, "Dear Clarence, this is to say goodbye to you. Some give their souls for others, and I will do this for my children. God bless them. They will all die happy in the arms of Jesus. I will meet them there, and someday you will join us too." And this is the part that really reminded me of the Andrea Yates case. Like I said, Andrea Yates was convinced her children were possessed by the devil, so that was a little different. But obviously this woman, when she's talking about, you know, giving her soul for others. Do you see what I'm... There's some sort of a mental break going on here.
Right.
And this is what's making me think postpartum psychosis. That right. somehow she's convinced, I need to do this, and I'm sacrificing my soul by murdering my children so they can go to Jesus, but I'm still going to end up going to Jesus. Like, it's just a weird...
Right. And especially for somebody who's... like, coming from a super fundamentally Christian family, that's very strange because, as we've talked about prior in my, I don't remember his name, mm-hmm. the guy who killed his whole family because they were straying away from Jesus.
Right.
As oh, we've yeah. talked about in that case, suicide is, mm-hmm. this in air quotes, the ultimate sin because you then are dead and you can't repent. So that is strange to me because she did.
Right.
And I'm wondering if maybe that was the hesitation in her slitting her throat, is that she realized, like, I can't repent this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't know. Yeah. And you could be onto something there. Like I said, there's a lot of, well, I mean, murdering your children is an incredibly excuse me, illogical, psychotic act to begin with.
Right.
But obviously, this is what I'm saying, though. I think there's definitely some psychosis of something going on here.
Right.
So that letter was printed, and then, according to the Chicago Tribune, after receiving this letter, Clarence tied a noose around his neck, stood on a chair, and then put a bullet in his brain. So just in case the bullet didn't work, he was going to... Yeah.
Wow.
And so that's the tale of a family annihilation, which...
It's been a while since we've had one of those.
I know. And they're so damn depressing and awful and insane.
Yeah, that one's weird. There's just a lot of... There's a lot of weird things in that one. And not even... I don't know. I just...
Well, what's weird to me is she had sent this letter, right, to her husband. She knew he was going to be getting it. So why did she lie?
Right.
Was she, or did she think when she crawled out of the house, I might...
Live through this?
Like, yeah.
I might...
But still, right. You had tried to slit your own throat and you had stayed in a burning house.
Right.
Why would you then not want... You know what I mean? So if that didn't work, why wouldn't you just take the death penalty at that case? Like, there's just a lot here. Right. And that's what makes me think postpartum psychosis, because her thinking is obviously all over the place. And right. Again, not to make excuses, but that's just a weird thing when people totally break like that. And, you know, what you said, is there some inherent evil in them already? I don't know, you know? I don't know. Because I know, like with Andrea Yates, everyone who knew her, you know, there was never any hint of any of that.
But how often do you hear about that when it comes to people killing somebody? Because that's the first thing that people say, oh, I never would have expected it from them.
Right.
You know, that's the first thing anybody says when somebody is, you know what I mean?
So usually, yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. It's hard because...
And I think, too, just with Lori Vallow and all the stuff that's still going on with her and Chad Daybell going on, that this case...
Suspicious.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, but this case, I think, just resonated with me because of that.
Right.
And I have to say, and I think we've talked about this before, historical murders like that are easier for me...
To distance yourself from.
Somehow, just the fact that all this time has passed... I don't know why. It doesn't make any sense, but it helps. And like I said, I need all of that I can get right now.
And I think with this one specifically, I think it's a little easier to distance yourself from, because another thing, and we've talked about this before too, is that when we cover these cases, and we've had family members of victims that we've talked about reach out to us.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's another thing that we try to normally be aware of. And in this case, they all ended up dead.
Right.
So I think it's a little easier to try to like backtrack and you're like, okay, well, none of these kids are still alive.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they wouldn't have been, because it's so long ago, but their family tree would have continued to expand and obviously didn't because the circumstances. But yeah.
But sad story.
Right.
I know.
So since we're done with that one, and I know I posted about it on the discussion group, so if any of you were on there, you saw a little glimmer of it. But last episode, we had opened and I had told this whole story about Melvin Hanks, who had been calling my salon a ton of times, and we ended up getting in contact with cops, blah, 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 blah. Well,
and has some sort of weird hair fetish, which is a new one for me.
I really would love to sit down on the phone with this man, not in person. I don't want to be anywhere near him, but I would really want to know why. I do have a couple of theories, and I'll tell you my theories here in a moment. I do have a couple of theories. I want to know why. I want to know what he is doing with them, or why it is that he wants the hair. You know, and I want like a full-on honest, like, if you've got some weird sexual fetish with hair, I want you to tell me that. I want to know what it is that you want this hair for, or my mind will continue to race and I will come up with theories like this one. This one's like my favorite theory so far, and this is the one that I believe probably most of all so far. Now, with that article that came out about him, it said that he had shared a crib, and I put crib in quotes because that was the exact word they used in the article. But my thing is, had that been a slang word for house, I feel like there would have been more slang in the rest of the article. Or if they meant crib by, like, bed. I don't know. Anyway, he shared something in close quarters with his 80-year-old father at the time. Right?
Yeah.
And when he calls, he tells me that he and his wife make wigs for sick children. Where's the wife, is my question.
Oh, well, obviously I think he lied about her too, right?
I have a theory.
Oh, dear Lord.
It's maybe a little, I don't want to say crazy, but it may be a little out there. But this is my best theory so far. It's like a Norman Bates situation, except with his wife. She's dead. That's my thought. Is his wife is dead. He's got her locked in the basement, and he's using this hair to make wigs to keep her young and youthful. That's my theory.
That's quite a theory. That's like some Norman Bates.
That's what I said.
That's some Norman Bates level crap. That, I don't... Go for it. Yeah, I don't...
So he called again. Sorry, guys. I didn't finish that thought. So... My bad. He called us again and I talked to him. And I did have a plan that when he called, I was just going to start reciting the article. Which I had the first few sentences of it memorized. And I fully, like, had planned on it. I had worked myself up for it. I was ready for him to call and it was going to happen. And then he called and I panicked and it didn't happen. Because, you know, anxiety and adrenaline and everything. And I just, like, I feel like my brain almost shut down for a minute. And I was just like, I don't know what to do. So he called again and I did end up yelling at him. And I was like, hey, Melvin. And I'm saying it a lot nicer now than I did when I was on the phone because I was yelling at him. because I answered the phone nicely, and then when I realized it was him, that's when I got a little cranky, because I'm over it, because when a cop tells you to quit calling, quit calling! When we tell you numerous times to quit calling, quit calling. And the last time he had called, so when all of that happened on that Friday, we had recorded that following Sunday.
Right.
That next day, on Monday, he had called the salon again.
Right.
And one of our nail techs, I wasn't there that day, that was one of my days off, one of our nail techs had talked to him and told him, if you don't quit calling, we're going to press charges. And so what I think is, because she didn't call him by his name, I think that he was probably like, well, how the fuck are you going to press charges if you don't know who I am?
Right.
So when he called on Tuesday this week, I had answered it and I was just like, hey, Melvin, because that was the first time I'd gotten to use his real name with him. And I just basically was like, we've told you to quit calling. The cops told you to quit calling. If you don't want to stop, then we're going to press charges. And he acted stupid. He's like, what? He's like, my name's not Melvin. I don't know what you're talking about. And I was like, yes, it is. I was like, your name is Melvin Hanks. You were arrested in 2002 for stealing ponytails. Quit fucking calling. And then he hung up on me. So I guess we'll see. We'll see if he calls back. If he calls back, we are for sure calling the cops. And we will continue with pressing charges.
Right.
But as of right now we just wait. I just don't get it. And then another thing is because he is 73 now, right? And so I was also talking to one of my nail techs the other day, and I was wondering what if he has some, like, memory issues? And he maybe have, like, forgot that he called us a bunch of times. I don't know. That's just me trying to be nice, but, like, fuck this guy. I don't know. I'm just trying. You like how I call him Norman Bates in 1 second, and then my next one's like, he might have some sort of memory issue.
I'm really worried about his cognitive decline. Oh, man. All right.
But this fucking guy is a nutcase. Gosh.
Well, like I said, I think I have some sort of trauma, because I just, like, honestly, everything just keeps happening, and it gets weirder and worse all the time, and I just, like I said, I don't even know anymore.
Yeah.
So anyway, next week we'll be back in Illinois for your case.
See. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have one picked out yet?
Nope.
Okay. So Kaylin, if you got any good Illinois cases for Kaylin,
send me some cases.
Send them her way.
Please.
And
help my procrastination, please.
Yes. And please stay safe, wear a mask, be sane.
Or don't wear a mask. It depends. You and I have very different opinions on this. If you don't want to, you don't have to, unless it's mandated. And even then, I don't agree with it. But we're going to throw that out there.
We may not be back next week, so.
We'll see. Make sure you follow us on Instagram. Don't look at our Twitter because there's nothing there to look at.
I've been really good, though, about updating our Facebook page.
You have been really good about Facebook.
And we've also had a few new people join our discussion group as well, so thank you.
Also, just a quick little friendly reminder, if you do join our Facebook page, we really do appreciate when you actually answer the questions that are asked. It's not going to deny you anything. Myself mostly, I'm just super interested and I want to know what kind of cases that you guys like. So it does kind of bum me out a little bit when people just leave them blank and don't answer it. Mm. I'll still approve you, but like it does kind of bum me out a little bit.
You're fast on the approvals. Like I never get to approve people because as soon as I see it, you've already done it. So
yeah, I really enjoy seeing what kind of cases you guys like. So please don't leave them blank.
Yeah. And don't be shy about commenting on either the Facebook page discussion group, sending us an email, all that good stuff.
Make sure you rate and review us on Apple, please.
Yes. Or any of the platforms where you listen.
Apple's just the only one that I can track. So.
Okay. And once again, we thank you for listening. Stay safe. Till next time. Bye!